Welcome, friends. Settle in and turn the lights down low for our latest installment of Fireside Mystery Theater. The following original radio play was performed as part of our Strange Anatomy show, taped live at the Slipper Room on the eve of a New York City Halloween.
Since 1919, Robert L. Ripley's Believe It or Not, a widely circulated series of newspaper cartoons, films, radio, and TV shows, as well as a worldwide fleet of museums, better known as auditoriums, has created a warehouse of astonishing documents that capture the human form in ways that steadily defy the norm. Consider the following bits of astonishing bodily trivia.
Robert Wadlow, the world's tallest man, was already 8 feet 1.5 inches by the time he was 17 years old.
The eye popper. Paul Whitaker of Atlanta can project his eyes from his head at will.
Martin Joel Lorello, also known as the human owl, can turn his head in rotation a full 270 degrees.
Harry McGregor can pull his wife Lillian on a wagon, using a chain hooked to his eyelids.
The lighthouse man of Chongqing, Sichuan Province, China, goes about the streets at night with a lighted red candle 7 or 8 inches at length, stuck in the vertex of his skull.
The boy who died of old age, Charles Charlesworth, born in Staffordshire, England in 1829, reached maturity and grew whiskers at the age of 4. His face was wizened, his hair whitened, his skin shriveled, hands knotted with conspicuous veins and tendons, voice piping, and gait and standing posture that of an old man. He died suddenly in a faint when just 7 years old.
While Robert Ripley was a colorful and fascinating character in his own right, there lies an unsung hero in his estimable shadow. The man who discovered each of these fascinating facts, an unusual man named Norbert Perlroth. Perlroth, a Polish emigre, was the main researcher for Ripley's Believe It or Not from 1923 until 1975. He was fluent in 14 languages, and he spent 6 to 7 days a week in the main branch of the New York Public Library on Fifth Avenue in Manhattan, where he would comb books and scan periodicals to furnish the 4 to 6 believe it or nots required for each day's newspaper cartoon. In the following story, an original radio play by Silben Sandovar called, appropriately enough, Perlroth, we mix the fact of the man with a very liberal dose of bizarre fantasy. Our story begins one morning in Robert Ripley's Midtown Manhattan office. Ripley is in the middle of drawing a cartoon when a visitor arrives.
Hello, Bob. Bob. Bob, oh, for the love of...
Oh, hey there, Mr. Perlroth. What's this all about? I was listening to that.
You couldn't hear me, Bob.
But I like to have music on while I draw my cartoons. What can I do for you, Mr. Perlroth?
It's Monday.
Oh, yes. That's right. So it is.
Here are the newest items. About 2 weeks' worth of them.
Remarkable. Absolutely remarkable. You provide these fantastic bits faster than I can draw cartoons for them. Sometimes I worry we're going to run out one day.
We won't. Not as long as I'm around.
You ought to take a vacation, Mr. Perlroth. I worry sometimes that you spend too much time cooped up in that library on 6th Avenue.
It's on 5th Avenue, Bob.
Right.
You should come visit one of these days. It is, for my money, the greatest place on earth. Every day is a terrific adventure. It's easily the finest library in the whole world. I couldn't ask for a better workplace.
I'm sure it's lovely, but we provide you with a handsome office of your own, do we not?
I like my office fine, Bob. But as you know, the great library at Bryant Park is where the obscure and hidden fruits of knowledge needed for our beloved enterprise is harvested each day.
Well, you are an excellent harvester. I'll give you that. I'm sure I've told you that on more than one occasion. So as I was saying, you ought to take a vacation. Come along with me on my next journey.
I've already done that once before. That was not a vacation.
You just don't know how to have fun. Damn it, Perlroth, I'm convinced I'm the fellow to show you how.
I appreciate the offer, but...
I'm going to Tibet this time. Do you realize how few Americans get to travel there?
I'm quite aware. After all, I planned your trip and created your itinerary based on my research.
So you did. So you did. Splendid. I just can't wait to gaze upon the monastery of Patala with my own eyes.
Be sure to make it a point to see the alphabet tree, the Kumbum Monastery. Supposedly, actual Sanskrit characters miraculously appear on the leaves of the tree.
That should be interesting. So what do we have here among your items this week, Mr. Perlroth? Let me see here. You have beautiful handwriting, by the way, Mr. Perlroth. Have I ever told you that?
Thank you, Bob. Here's a few samples of this week's Believe It or Nots. Okay, how about this? I have a barrel full of dimes and a barrel full of quarters. Which one is the more valuable?
Well,
the dimes, of course. A barrel of dimes equals $96,536. A barrel of quarters only gives you $87,975.
I'll be sure to bear that in mind the next time I'm collecting loose change around the house. Good. What else do we have?
Well, have you heard of the story of the book that is treated like a king? The holy book of the Sikh religion in India, the Granth Sahib. Pious servants fan the book all day long with golden-handled fans made of peacock feathers. In fact, the golden temple of Amritsar was built at a cost of $40 million for the express purpose of housing the book, making it the world's most expensive book cover.
Not bad.
And this was a particularly exquisite find. Have you ever heard of Arthur McMurrough Cavanaugh?
No, do tell.
He was an Irishman from County Carlow. He was a greatly respected man in his time back in the 19th century. He served in Parliament for 14 years. He excelled at hunting, yachting, fishing, horseback riding, and was a fine painter and draftsman. He also married a beautiful woman and fathered 7 children.
That's fairly interesting, I suppose.
Oh, what's even more interesting, Bob, is that our good Arthur McMurrough Cavanaugh achieved all of these things, although he was born without arms or legs.
Ha ha! Well, bully for him, I say. By gum, I like that one. Say, I might want to use that one for my radio program. Make a note of that, will you?
Certainly, Bob.
This looks to be yet another excellent batch of Believe It or Nots, Mr. Perlroth. Once again, I congratulate you. If you'll excuse me, even though you're ahead of deadlines, I'm falling a bit too far behind on mine. I still have a number of these damned cartoons to finish. Hell, if I let that get in the way of my having beers and oysters this afternoon with my pal Bugs. Going back to the library, I take it?
Yes, I have quite a long to-do list.
Fine, then. Mr. Perlroth, I still say you need to spend a little less time at that library. It leaves you looking gloomy and sour. You look like you need some sun. How many days a week are you in there?
6. Sometimes 7 days a week.
Ugh, for Pete's sake. I don't mind paying you for all that time, but Mr. Perlroth, take up a hobby. Even better, how about a sport? Have you ever boxed before? It's the best exercise there is. The footwork alone. Jab, jab, jab.
I appreciate your concern, Bob. But I'm in excellent health, of body as well as of mind. I will see you later.
Hello, Mr. Perlroth.
Hello, Louise. What's going on here? Is this part of the library closed for the day? I was hoping to gain access to some microfiche from Stroudsburg.
No, just for a couple of hours. It's for a reception being thrown by Thelma Astor.
Oh, she's a relation to the great Jacob Astor, the founder of this wonderful library, is she not?
And still one of our biggest benefactors, Mr. Perlroth.
I understand. I'll just come back a little later, then.
Oh, it's all right. Why don't you come in? There's some very tasty hors d'oeuvres they've laid out for this one. You can be my guest.
Oh, as a matter of fact, I am feeling a little hungry. I had to skip lunch this afternoon. Are you sure my being there is not going to be an imposition of any kind?
You're with me. You'll be fine. They won't know and they won't care. Come on. Let's see how the other half lives for a moment, why don't we?
I can never say no to you, Louise.
This way. Over here, Mr. Perlroth. Let's grab some of these deviled eggs here. They've hardly touched any of them.
You first.
Ooh, so naughty. I think I'll have some of these stuffed mushrooms, too.
Look, that's Thelma Astor, isn't it? She's coming this way. Are you sure we're not going to be in trouble being here, noshing away on their food?
We're fine. And besides, I think she's had a little bit too much to...
Excuse me, miss. Isn't there anyone here who can help me?
No one's helping me.
Oh, boy. I can smell the gin from here.
Shh. I'm sure I can help you. What's the matter, Miss Astor?
I lost my brooch. Where is it?
What did it look like?
Allow me to hazard a guess. It's from Tiffany's.
Yes.
And it's really more of a pendant than an actual brooch, with white agate stone cameos with little cherubs.
Uh-huh.
Surrounded by pave and closet diamonds, mounted in white gold.
You've seen it.
I'm looking at it right now, floating in the punch bowl behind you.
Oh, yes, that's it. Thank you. Thank you, Mr.
Perlroth. Norbert Perlroth.
Thanks, Mr. Perlroth. I don't know what I would have done without that brooch. It's the single finest heirloom I have from my Uncle Jonathan. Oh, poor Uncle Jonathan.
I take it he's passed away recently?
No, not really. Not quite. Oh, he'd been dying of cancer. There he was, at death's door, and then, poof, he just disappears. We go to his bedroom one morning, and he's just not there, you see.
That's odd.
I don't know what to do. What are we going to do?
This must be a difficult time for the Astor family.
He's not an Astor, he's a Headley, on my mother's side.
Jonathan Headley.
Well, I'm very sorry, Miss Astor. I hope they can get to the bottom of this.
It's so strange. Where is he? Where could he have gone?
This is the same... This is the same Jonathan Headley who has been involved in the isolationist movement here in America, is he not?
Oh, well, he was, until he became ill. But we don't like to talk about that, all right, sir?
I apologize for my forwardness, madam. Do you know who was the last person that you know of who saw your Uncle Jonathan?
Everett Goodstone was the last person seen with him, that son of a... But you don't need to know about that either.
I can see why you feel that way.
Why is that?
I'll tell you later.
I'm sure he's dead. My Uncle Jonathan's, that is. I mean, there's no way he could be alive, given the state that he was in. I just wish I could know what happened to him. Where he is. Where is he?
You'll have to excuse me, ladies. Ms. Astor, Louise, I just now noticed what time it is. I beg your pardon. I'm afraid I have some work I need to attend to.
Where are you going, Mr. Perlroth?
To Rare Collections, to satisfy my curiosity regarding something related to this discussion.
May I join you?
If you'd like.
You're up to something, Mr. Perlroth. What is it? What do you have there?
Be careful. These documents are quite delicate.
What are they?
Back issues of the American Review from the year 1845.
This has nothing to do with Jonathan Headley's disappearance, does it?
It has something to do with Edgar Allan Poe. And yes, it might have something to do with Jonathan Headley as well. Maybe.
But it's 1936. Edgar Allan Poe died in, I believe, it was 1850 or so.
1849. Now I need to check on some more current periodicals. Here it is, just as I recall. It was mentioned in the Suffolk County Argus and also here in the Brooklyn Daily Eagle from this past week.
What was mentioned?
Look here. This is the photograph of our missing Jonathan Headley from a few years back. And if you look here, in this issue of the Brooklyn Eagle from 2 days ago, you can see in the accompanying photograph from this article.
American Nazi colony thrives in Yaphank, Long Island.
That we can see not only Everett Goodstone, the last man to ever see Jonathan Headley, but not too far in the background. It's a little hard to see, but if I pass my magnifying lens over it, you can see he's a little bit cropped out of the photo. But that is unmistakably our missing Uncle Jonathan.
Wow! Yes, it does look like him. How can you be sure?
It's him.
So he's not sick after all?
Well, I believe he might be something worse than sick.
So you're going to inform Thelma Astor, right?
No, not yet. I'm afraid there's something very dark and strange here that might be too incredible for some to digest.
But you have to tell her somehow.
Not yet.
Then what are you going to do, Mr. Perlroth? Where are you going?
I'm just going for a little stroll. I'll see you tomorrow.
Mr. Perlroth!
Louise, are you following me?
Why are you following Everett Goodstone?
Louise, you really shouldn't have... I shouldn't have shared so much with you.
Well, how did you find him?
The article went on to say that he was giving an address tonight at the Masonic Temple on West 23rd Street. Sure enough, I spotted him leaving the event and have been tailing him ever since.
You know, we should just call the police, Mr. Perlroth.
Blast it! I'm going to lose him. He went around that corner.
I see him. He just went into Penn Station.
Toward the Long Island Railroad. I really wish you wouldn't have come along with me, Louise.
Well, how often do I get to see Long Island?
This is not a sightseeing. Oh, all right. Let's just keep our eyes on Mr. Goodstone and let's not make it too obvious that we're following him.
So what stop do you think we'll be getting off at?
You wait and see. You'll be getting off at Yaphank, home of Camp Siegfried. A curious little hamlet on Long Island, about 70 miles from Manhattan. A nice, tidy little tree-lined suburb, complete with cute, quaint little streets named after Goering, Goebbels, and Adolf Hitler. Believe it or not.
All right. You can let us out here, driver. There you go. Thank you.
We're in the middle of nowhere.
I didn't invite you to come along, you know.
I'm cold.
Here's my coat.
Thanks. Are you sure this is the farmhouse?
Oh, yes. Easier. I'm sure of it.
How sure are you?
You'll feel less cold if you keep moving. Let's walk.
So why are you going to all the trouble to do all of this, Mr. Perlroth?
For two reasons, mainly, Louise.
What are they?
For one, Ms. Thelma Astor is a great friend and financial supporter of our beloved library, my absolute favorite place on this great earth. And secondly, I am a Jew from Poland. I have some relations and friends back in Europe whose lives are being made a living hell by the Nazi party.
I'm so sorry, Mr. Perlroth.
Wait. What's that?
Oh, I don't like the sound of that one bit.
I can see inside the barn. Good Lord, quick! Duck behind this plow!
What did I just see there?
I don't know. I'm going to try to get a closer look.
Oh, no, you won't. Stay right where you are.
Well done, Christine, my love. Who are you two? Police? FBI?
We're sorry. We just wandered onto your property. Our car broke down a few miles away, and we're hoping...
Really? How did you manage to do that, since the two of you have been following me all the way from Manhattan? Now, I'm only going to ask you once more. Who are you?
I'm Louise Bessie. I'm just a librarian. And this is Norbert Perlroth. He works for Believe It or Not by Robert Ripley.
That hokey newspaper cartoon? I liked your other story better. Okay, Christine, let's take him out to the woods.
I know all about you and Jonathan Headley. I know he's here.
There's only so much credit I can grant you there. What's your name again?
Norbert. Norbert
Powell. Louise, do you mind?
All right. All right, Norbert. What else do you know? And you're going to tell me and how you know it. Or you're dead.
Mr. Perlroth!
Shut up.
I know that you are not only a key driving force for the American Nazi Party, but you also have even greater ambitions to undermine the government of the United States of America.
Really? And how do you figure I'm doing that?
Well, you're something of a meddler with the black arts and sciences.
A meddler? A meddler! I should have you shot for saying that! I'm no meddler. I'm a master!
You have no right to keep that poor man alive.
So you know. How is it that you know?
It is my job, my work, to know things, to find things, no matter how deeply buried and hidden they are. First, I found out about you. You have published certain obscure and obscene papers, mostly written in a corrupt and coarse Latin that dwell on the science of mesmerism.
Go on.
You discovered, as I did, that certain physicians in the early to mid-19th century perfected a certain type of mesmerism, or, as we call it today, hypnosis, that can, if utilized properly at the precise moment before death, can prolong human life indefinitely. When Edgar Allan Poe's story, The Facts in the Case of M. Valdemar, was published in 1845, a story about a man being kept alive in a manner such as this, it was not presented as a work of fiction, but as a piece of journalism. He later recanted and declared the story a work of fiction not because it wasn't true, but because his conscience wouldn't allow him to proliferate something so completely poisonous to human civilization. An insult to the very nature of human existence. A thing of great evil that had to be forever quashed. You somehow crept into this man, Jonathan Headley's home, knowing his time was nearing its end. And you hypnotized him.
And why would I do that?
Why? Let's have a better glance at what you have here in your barn.
Don't you move another step.
It's all right. Let him.
Look at this grotesque banquet table you've set here. All these old men seated at it.
Oh, not just Headley, but several others, I dare say, that I recognize. All powerful men of politics, business, and industry.
All ghoulishly captured at the moment of death by your hypnosis and being made to serve...
Mein Führer! But you are wrong about one thing. They are not being kept alive against their will. They are the last of the truly great men of this country. True patriots who understood the way of the Nazi Party is what is best for America. They only wanted to live to see the day where that dream would be fully realized, and I was only too happy to oblige. Each one of these great men gave me their consent and their word of honor that we may enlist their great minds to aid and counsel our noble cause. These men are not enslaved. I would not make men such as these suffer such an indignity. No, no. It is I who is their obedient and humble servant.
All praise to the Führer.
Shut up! This is your last warning.
Everett is correct. Although it gives us tremendous pain to exist in this morbid state, we are still willing to sacrifice our final peace for the betterment of our country and this world. We meet each day in secret to share our wisdom, to give our counsel, to strengthen our allies, and to crush our enemies. Crush our enemies, and anyone who dares stand in our way.
You all should know, I have learned just enough of this foul art in order to say this to all of you. I need you now to listen to me. Listen to me. Listen to me.
What are you doing? Christine!
The sound of my voice. I command you, I command all of you to awaken. Awaken! Then return to sleep. Eternal sleep.
Christine! Shoot him! Now! You fool! You just murdered them! Murderer!
Oh, my God! Their bodies! Their flesh is falling away from their bones!
Look away, Luis!
Christine! Kill them! Now! Kill them! Kill them! Kill them! What are you waiting for? Do it!
Oh, my God. Everett, why did she...
That's because she's a spy, Luis. An American spy. She's working for us. Isn't that right, miss?
My identity is of no concern to you, sir. But thank you just the same.
No. It's you we have to thank.
We were actually hoping to keep Everett Goodstone around a little longer.
Just like he wanted to keep those elderly men around a little longer, eh?
All right, we need to clear out of here now. Mr. Perlroth, is it?
Yes.
Have you ever considered doing any kind of intelligence work? We could use a fellow like you. Here, take this card.
I'm quite flattered, but no thank you. Keep the card, miss. But if you should ever need me, you're sure to find me at the main branch of the New York Public Library at Fifth Avenue and 42nd Street. I'm always there.
A postscript. Yes, Norbert Perlroth was a very real person, but what was also true in the story that you just heard, fact, Edgar Allan Poe did indeed first publish in the American Review in 1845 the facts in the case of M. Valdemar, and led many at the time to believe it was a piece of nonfiction before later confessing the opposite to be true. Or was it? In fact, the town of Yaphank on Long Island was at one time a home base for a cluster of American Nazi sympathizers in the 1930s. And yes, there really was an Adolf Hitler street in the town. The main branch of the New York Public Library on Fifth Avenue and 42nd Street, where Mr. Perlroth spent much of his working life, is truly a place of wonder. It rewards many a visit with visual splendor, such as the great reading room and the iconic lion statues that guard the entrance, as well as many hidden and priceless treasures waiting for you around every corner. And after you visit the library, take a short stroll down 42nd Street to Ripley's Believe It or Not auditorium in Times Square. There you can marvel at the weird and whimsical fruits of Robert Ripley and Norbert Perlroth's unique legacy. It's open 7 days a week from 9 a.m. to 1 a.m. And now, Martina Da Silva.
I was born without
Martina Da Silva singing Tabletop Joe. It's a tune that is an ode to legendary sideshow performer Johnny Eck. Eck, known better by his stage name, the Amazing Half Man, was born without a lower torso and was no stranger himself to the pages of Ripley's Believe It or Not. He was immortalized in this song written by none other than Mr. Tom Waits. And now a word from one of our sponsors.
Ali Silva in A Fright for Sore Eyes.
And now, to reveal the winner of Fifth and Maiden's Darkly, Deliciously Fabulous Mystery Makeover, drum roll, please.
We don't have a drum.
Just make a drum roll sound with your mouth, then.
I can't. I have a forked tongue.
Never mind. The winner is Jamie Jelly. Our own Ali Silva is going to drape you personally with the latest and greatest Fifth and Maiden creations. Come on over, Jamie. Oh,
It's all yours, Ellie.
Oh, hi there, Jamie. Yes, that's quite a look you have. Yes, please, just slither over here if you could.
Oh, wow! Ellie Silva! I can't believe I won!
Congrats, Jamie. You are so unique looking.
I'm so happy to have been unchained and released from the cellar to receive this honor.
Well, let's start with these beautiful Fifth and Maiden Rio chandelier earrings. First, I'll pin one on this ear, and then this ear, and this ear, and this, is this an ear?
Yes. Five more to go. Do you also do piercings?
No. Well, would you mind putting your tongue back in your mouth, Jamie?
That's not my tongue.
Ew.
James Reeser here, bravely carrying on with his ad copy despite trembling violently with revulsion and disgust. Fifth and Maiden offers wholesale organic luxury jewelry and housewares that blend clean lines...
with a bit of slither. I mean, shiver. Shimmer!
With a bit of shimmer. Made with exquisite natural finds directly from the stunning California coastline. All Fifth and Maiden pieces are handcrafted in their SoCal studio. To learn more, just go to their website, fifthandmaiden.com. Fifth and Maiden are the official jewelers of Fireside Mystery Theater.
And that concludes our program. Norbert Perlroth was played by James Reeser, and Louise Vesey was played by Mary Murphy. Bill Heidrich played Robert Ripley, Eric Davy Gislason played Everett Goodstone, Michael Pate played Jonathan Headley, Annabelle Rollison played Christine, and I played the part of Thelma Astor. The musical performance, Tabletop Joe, written by Tom Waits and Kathleen Brennan, was arranged and performed by Martina Da Silva, accompanied by Jason Yeager. Our show was directed by Annabelle Rollison and produced by Gustavo Rodriguez, Daniel and Rebecca Graves, and myself for Fireside Mystery Productions. Our theme music is by Jason Graves, our musical score was improvised by Jason Yeager, our sound designer is Greg Russ, our technical director is Johnny Goddard, our production coordinator is Dahlia Morali, and our production assistant is Brontis Shane Orengo. Stay tuned for next week's podcast episode of Fireside Mystery Theater and Our Strange Anatomy. If you're in New York City, be sure to catch our next show, Siblings, as we tape it live at the Slipper Room on Sunday, November 27th at 7 p.m. Tickets on sale at slipperroom.com. And for fans in the New Jersey area, join us for a special holiday show at the Bickford Theater at the Morris Museum on Sunday, the 4th of December at 3 p.m. Tickets on sale at morrismuseum.org. This is Ali Silva, kindly admonishing you to mind the shadows.